Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are a few people who have been conducting more courageous activities on behalf of freedom in more difficult places around the world than our first guest. She is Lady Carolyn Cox, a baroness, if you please, in the House of Lords in the United Kingdom, and a woman of great renown for her commitment to human rights, the civil liberties of not only her own people, but people around the world. Lady Cox, it's so good to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Good to be with you.
We have had the privilege of speaking this week with your colleague in the House of Lords, Lord Malcolm Pearson, and he spoke highly of you, as we all do. And it called to mind some of the important work that you've been doing. Before we get to that, though, could I just get your quick take on what I'm concerned increasingly looks like a full-on insurgency in the United Kingdom, not simply random acts of terrorism by isolated individuals?
Well, thank you. I think we are seeing an escalation of radical Islamist violence, and it is deeply worrying, and much of it is probably very hard to prevent. But I was very impressed and touched by a word of advice that was given to us by the Grand Mufti in Damascus when I visited Syria. He represents the Muslims of Syria, so he is a devout Muslim. But he told us how he'd visited Britain, and he was appalled. When he went to one of our major mosques in London, Regent's Park Mosque, he said there was an imam there who was the kind of Wahhabi, that's a kind of aggressive, radical form of Islam, who was in post. He thought he might well be funded by Saudi Arabia, but he was not teaching peace and democracy, and he went to other mosques. And he said, what are you doing in Britain? He said, you're sowing the seeds of your own destruction. He said, what you ought to have in Britain is a college that trains imams in the kind of theology which respects democracy, and where they will preach a message to the people who attend those mosques, encouraging integration, encouraging peace. But what you have at the moment is the exact opposite. And then he was very gracious. He said, you know, I'll write the curriculum. I'll come to Britain. I'll do it for free. You need it. Now, that was a serious message. We're allowing, through various means, messages to go out to our people. And some of them have come here, haven't necessarily lived in countries which are democratic. They need to be taught about democracy and integration and tolerance, not the kind of teaching that we understand is going on in many mosques and many madrasas, and we have to address that issue.
Let me just ask you, Carolyn Cox, though, when you, as I know, have studied the teachings of Islam, it seems pretty clear, as Malcolm Pearson said to us yesterday, that the principles that you might find in some passages of the Quran, the early passages, as it were, have been abrogated according to the tenets of Sharia, and they have been replaced by the kind of virulent stuff that's being promoted and taught and inculcated in not just your mosques, but many of ours as well. How do you square that circle with a different kind of curriculum? Is it really something that requires a more fundamental reform of Islam itself?
I think it does indeed, because the principle of abrogation was developed very early on in Islamic theology, because, as you rightly say, there are the verses of peace and there are the verses of the sword, which do promote killing. And because it was deemed in those days that Allah could not be inconsistent, it was deemed that the later revelations of the Prophet would abrogate the earlier revelations of the Prophet. And unfortunately, the later revelations are indeed the aggressive and prone to violence revelations. I might just say in Christianity, we're very fortunate, because although the Bible, the Old Testament, has a lot of violence in it, our abrogation went the other way, because Jesus said to his followers, because a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. So Christianity has an abrogation in the direction of love. Unfortunately, conservative traditional Islam has an abrogation that goes in the verses of the sword, and that's why I think you see some of those verses on banners being waved by ISIS, etc. So in order to, as it were, achieve a kind of Islamic theology that would enable Muslims to have a coherent theology, a peaceable theology, I think there does need to be, and I think many Muslims recognize this, a certain rethinking of the traditional Islamic theological position. And there are many Muslims who are working towards that, and they need to be encouraged and supported and heard.
Yeah. But unfortunately, and not suppressed by folks like the Muslim Brotherhood who are busily
exactly.
at that. Lady Cox, you were described as having promoted some time ago an important piece of legislation in the House of Lords to try to come to grips with this bit of Sharia sort of insinuating itself into, I believe, particularly the British judiciary or judicial system. You found some rough sledding at the hands of the woman who was at the time the Home Secretary, now the Prime Minister, Theresa May. Give us a sense of what happened there and how that bears on the choices facing Britain today.
Well, thank you. Yes, I mean, Sharia law is allowed to be practiced in the UK. We have at least 85 Sharia councils or courts that we know about, probably many we don't. And I have to say, one must believe in freedom of religion. And a lot of Sharia courts and councils are meant to be dealing with mediation in family disputes, etc. Well, you know, a Christian can go to a priest, a Jew can go to a rabbi, someone can go to a social worker. So we must allow freedom of religion. But my bottom line is that we must not allow any rulings that are incompatible with the fundamental laws, values, principles, and policies of our country. And the problem is that many of these Sharia rulings are incompatible. For example, they allow the Islamic divorce, where the man can just say, divorce you three times, and the wife is divorced, and unless there's been a legally registered marriage, which usually there hasn't, she has no rights whatever. It allows polygamy in a country that doesn't allow bigamy. So that, again, is a direct violation of the fundamental principles of our land. It also allows certain forms of domestic violence, and so on.
Female genital mutilation.
Indeed, but that actually goes to other faiths as well. I mean, it's more geographical, but it does indeed allow that, and that's another worry. So I introduced a private members bill which tries to address the rights of women, particularly Muslim women, who are suffering under the application of Sharia law in this country. And so many of these women have come to me. I've wept at them. They've told me their stories, and they are horrific stories. I'll just give you one little example, if I may, because it brings it all alive. There was a lady who suffered horrendous domestic abuse, and she was hospitalized. She wasn't allowed to seek help outside her community because that would bring shame on the community. There's this whole honor shame, very strong atmosphere or ethos in these communities. She had to go back to her abusive husband, and he continued to abuse. So then he divorced her. She's devout Muslim. She wanted an Islamic divorce. She wanted to marry someone else, Islamically, and she went to the imam, and he said, no, you've got to have your marriage certificate. Her husband didn't have to have it, but anyhow, she had to. Well, her husband had it, and he said, it's back with our family in the country we came from. So her family there went to that family to get her marriage certificate so she could get a divorce in this country. There, they beat up her younger brother because she was bringing shame on the community by wanting a divorce, so she couldn't get her marriage certificate, and she couldn't get married again as a devout Muslim. And so she suffered violence, she suffered that asymmetrical divorce, and she's now one very lonely lady in this country, and our suffragettes would be turning in their grave.
Lady Cox, very quickly, lastly, let me ask you about another aspect of all of this that you've been concerned about, and I think quite courageously speaking out against, and that is a kind of demographic jihad. Would you describe that for us and how it seems to be bearing on all of this in Britain at the moment, and a lesson to us?
I think it's something that does need to be taken very seriously. The Henry Jackson Society did a research study not so long ago which looked at the differential birth rates of differential groups in our society. And they looked, I think, it's easy to look up, I think they looked at the differential birth rates of Hindu fellow citizens, Sikhs, Jews, Afro-Caribbeans, and so on. And their birth rates may have peaked when they first came, but then settled down to the sort of British birth rate, whereas in many of the Muslim communities, they were running much, much higher than the British birth rate. Some of my Muslim lady friends, whom I really love, I have nothing but respect and affection for them, but they're deeply worried. They say in some of their communities, Men may have up to 20 kids each. They're growing up in dysfunctional families, so they're very vulnerable to radicalization. And also, of course, we're in a situation where demography may change democracy. And this, again, is a very serious issue for democracies.
Baroness Carolyn Cox, thank you so much for your time today and for your incredibly inspiring work, both in Britain and across the world. I look forward to our further conversations in the near future. In the meantime, stay well and keep it up.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.